Welcome to War Room, the official podcast of the U.S. Army War College online journal, graciously supported by the Army War College Foundation. Please join the conversation at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. We hope you enjoy the program.
Greetings to our listening audience and welcome to the War Room podcast. This is Jacqueline Witt, Professor of Strategy at the Army War College and the War Room podcast editor. When I think about back to my early school days and actually even into high school and college, I have a very clear memory of delight that I and most of my classmates felt when we saw the big TV cart or when the teacher would dim the lights and turn on a projector. It was movie day. And even now as a professor here, even though I'm teaching lieutenant colonels and colonels, I often find myself going to film clips and referencing films in class. And contrary to what I might have thought as a student, it's actually not just to fill time or because I'm being lazy. Films and movies, I think, offer us some real insights and opportunities in the classroom and are incredibly useful for teaching and promoting discussion about war and strategy. Here at the Army War College, one of the optional programs that's available to students and faculty is the Strategic Arts Film Program, which screens a wide variety of films related to war and strategy, and then various faculty members lead discussions about the films afterwards. And I think it's a really great way to broaden or deepen what we do in the classroom here. So joining me today to talk more about the challenges and opportunities of teaching strategic concepts using film, I'm pleased to be joined by Colonel Mark Gagnon, who is an academy professor at the United States Military Academy at West Point, where he teaches German in the Department of Foreign Languages. Mark also holds a PhD in Germanic languages and literature and teaches an advanced elective on German film and is interested broadly in the ways that film can be used to teach students about war and strategy. So welcome to the Warcast, Mark.
Thank you, Jackie, and I appreciate this opportunity to talk about film, war, and strategy.
Yeah, I think it's a good chance to be able to move past the, like, we're just filling time by showing film clips.
Yeah.
Something that students enjoy. So can you tell me a little bit more about how you became interested in the question of how we might use film to teach? And tell me a little bit about why you think broadly films are useful for teaching and learning.
Sure. Well, while pursuing my master's in German, I became very interested in a film set in 1959. But a film made in 1959 called Die Brücke, or The Bridge. I decided to focus my PhD research on West German war films. And while I was doing this research, I also screened a lot of Hollywood war films as well. So it gave me a chance to sort of compare and contrast the way that two different cultures interacted with film. I found that although the West German war films took place World War II, dealt with their immediate Nazi past, that they were really more about what was going on in the 50s, about citizens becoming or creating new citizens for the Federal Republic of Germany. One of the concepts that came across clearly in those films was what referred to in German as the Staatsbürger in Uniform, or the citizen soldier. So in an attempt to break from their militaristic past in the military, they've created a new concept where, first and foremost, a German military officer and soldier is a citizen first, a citizen that is adhering to democratic values. So this was a huge shift, and it can really be sort of witnessed in the films that I looked at in the 50s.
Sure, and I think this gets us to some of the questions about how we might use films in the classroom or to teach about these concepts. And when we talked earlier, we sort of identified maybe four different ways. So let's go through those four ways that these might be useful now. The first one seems to maybe be the most common or maybe the easiest to me, and that would be the use of film clips or, you know, discrete pieces of things to illustrate an idea or a concept. Let's talk about that one first, because
sure.
I think that's the most common usage.
Great. Yeah. So films can bring to life wars, battles, leaders, and examples of strategic decisions and examples of less successful strategic decisions. These recreations can then create discussion analysis and are great to use in the classroom. Just as an example, if I were to, say, teach a class on the beginning of World War II, we could use the film Tora, 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 which looks at a Japanese and American perspective on the war, talks about sort of things at the strategic leader level, at the admiral general level, about where forces were positioned, the element of surprise, and things like that. We can also take a film like Patton, for example, which is looking at a specific person, a biopic, we call it, and you can look at some of the strategic decisions that that individual leader made, but you can also look at their strategic character and evaluate, and that's also great for classroom mm-hmm. discussion.
I can imagine, too, you could compare things, right? How is a certain person depicted in multiple films,
right?
And talk and sort of get into some of those questions. I know I use, clips from Dr. Strangelove to talk about deterrence.
Right, yeah.
So there are things that really illustrate a broader point that you want to make. The second way that we might use films is to help us think about and develop strategic empathy, which is to say a type of perspective taking, to put yourself in the mind and the worldview of someone else.
Right.
And so how might we use film to do that?
So I think foreign films are a great way to show different perspectives on things and to create that strategic empathy that you just mentioned. What's great about films is you're getting a different perspective, not just in the narrative, which you can get in printed material, but also through the visuals and everything else that goes with the film. And it's really unfiltered, with the exception of the language, of course, which is going to be subtitled. Everything else is coming at you straight from a different perspective. To give you an example, the film I mentioned earlier, The Bridge, 1959, there's a great scene at the end of the film. And just a spoiler alert here, I'll give away some of the plot on this. On this 19.
Cut the podcast off now if you don't want to hear how this
yes,
ends.
Yes, on this thrilling 1959. I know it's really a great film, but towards the end of the film, it's about seven boys that are defending a bridge in their hometown village from the approaching Americans. And the bridge is basically meaningless, but they don't know that. They're fighting with fervor. And all except one of the boys end up dying in the process. So there's this great part at the end of the film where the lone survivor is trying to drag his buddies who are dead across the bridge. The camera sort of pans up and gives you a nice aerial shot of the bridge, which is littered with the bodies of the dead boys, blown up jeeps, other military equipment. The only sound that you hear is the river in the background, and you've got a lot of smoke, so much so that the smoke eventually makes the screen black, and then you have this text that appears that says, this incident happened on April 27th, 1945, so very close to the war's end, and it was so unimportant that it was never recorded in any official war reports. Now, if you contrast this, and I do this with my cadets in my class, with another famous last stand scene, which is we are all familiar with Saving Private Ryan, Tom Hanks, who plays Captain Miller at the end, trying to keep Private Ryan safe, is on a bridge shooting, using his pistol against a tank, eventually dies in the process. There's a lot that goes on at the end of that scene, to include sort of a sentimental soundtrack in the back with strings. And then we also hear the reading of a letter by George C. Marshall to Private Ryan's mother talking about sacrifice. And then it immediately transitions into Private Ryan as an older, almost elderly gentleman at a war cemetery. You get this great sort of sentimental soundtrack. And then the final image that we get is this waving American flag. Well, clearly you can see that in that film, in Saving Private Ryan, war has a purpose, right? Private Ryan mm-hmm. was saved, and the American dream, as indicated by the flag, continues. The Bridge, much different, right? War has no purpose in that film. The bridge is meaningless. The boys essentially die for nothing. So you can see right there, and what I've seen, that can shape sort of different approaches, you know, sort of a German thought on what war is and what an American thought. They're very distinct. I know it's helped me, not that, again, they don't all share the same perspective, but to realize that there's still this strong anti-war sort of sentiment and feeling from Germany. Of course, they were devastated after the war, whereas a little bit different take from the American point of view.
Sure. No, I think that seems really important, that there's not a German perspective, just
right.
Like there's not an American perspective, but by watching a film, you can get one perspective among many, and perhaps by watching more than one film, you can get more. This comparison brings to mind the sort of third usage, which is that films also tell us something about two points in time. They tell us about a sort of historical reference, and they also tell us about the time in which films were made. So, right, the West German film made in 1959 versus Saving Private Ryan, obviously
right.
made much later.
98,
98. I'm glad you had the specifics, because I wasn't going to remember that. Why do you think that is an important aspect of what we're talking about here?
Yeah, I think it's always important to recognize that a film, even a historical one, is a product of the own history that it is made in. They can tell us a lot about the war and strategy that occurred during the historical period, but also, of course, at the time it was made. One example that immediately comes to mind is the great 1970 war comedy MASH, which is set in Korea, but really is a critique of the Vietnam War. I also think it's important for strategic leaders to recognize how wars, battles, and the military get memorialized in literature and the arts, to include film, of course, and how these are constantly revisited and refashioned as part of this continually evolving historical narrative. Another example, Dunkirk just came out recently. Last year, Christopher Nolan's film sort of ignores politics, ignores showing the enemy mm-hmm. and is really focused on this sort of boots on the ground, individual survival stories. Of course, we have the three different narratives in it, but taking it down to a lower level and really making it more of an experiential experience. You know, we feel what these soldiers are going through as they try to escape. Try to get evacuated on the beaches.
Right. I'm reminded too about I studied the Vietnam War, so the difference in sort of
right.
Vietnam War filmography from, you know, how do you get from Platoon to Apocalypse Now
right.
to Rambo, right? That these
right.
these say really different things about America, about the Vietnam War, but different things about America at each point in which they're made. And so the Dunkirk example that you just used, I think, mm-hmm. actually leads us. You've done a very nice job of like leading us all the way through the four uses. This idea that films can be used to give contemporary viewers, many of whom are not in uniform,
right?
Right. We know that most Americans obviously don't serve in uniform. Statistics tell us that most Americans don't even know someone
right.
who has served in uniform. And even within the military is so big that people's experiences vary really widely. And so not everyone in uniform will serve in combat or experience that. And certainly Iraq is not Afghanistan, is not any of the number of other places where we have troops deployed. So films can give us contemporary viewers a sort of entry point, a window into war and combat. And so it's a referent for reality. Can you talk a little bit more about why that function might be important?
Yes, yes.
I might have given away the punchline on
yeah.
that one.
Well, I don't know if I can go. I wouldn't go so far as saying that combat is who goods is in film or similar to combat in reality. But I do think, as you stated there, that they offer a window into war and combat. What I find interesting in first-hand accounts of combat that I often read is that there's statements like, I felt like it was in a film, or I felt like it was in this film, or this was like that film. Black Hawk Down, for example,
mm-hmm.
comes out. I felt like this was a scene out of Black Hawk Down. And I remember when Saving Private Ryan came out in the late 90s, and how there was all this sort of press about, wow, these realistic
about
combat sequences and how important that was. So I think for those that haven't experienced, it's definitely a window into that, into what it might be like. And I think that there's a way, too, that the dynamic goes the other way and can shape how the military not just views combat, but can view war also. There's a terrific scene in the movie Jarhead, which came out in 2005, which shows a group of Marines watching the film Apocalypse Now. They're essentially getting ready to be sent to the Middle East for the first Persian Gulf War, and they're sort of getting hyped up. And there's a really great sequence in there that shows them watching Apocalypse Now and flips sort of cuts between the movie. And this is the scene, if you remember, where they're coming in on the helicopters. You have Flight of the Valkyries mm-hmm. in the background with Wagner. And there's this Vietnamese village that they're literally just, firestorm
right.
and destroying. And you watch the Marines cheering for it in this movie Jarhead and sort of getting pumped up
right.
to go over and fight a
yeah.
war in the Middle East.
It's so layered. I mean, right there you have right Vietnam as the referent
right.
and then a film about Vietnam in a film about the first Gulf
right.
War that's released in the midst of the second Gulf War and when Iraq is not going well, right?
Right.
I mean, the number of complexities that you have sort of converging there and the discussions that could open up seem just really rich, a rich text,
yes.
right, for what we might understand. So speaking of film as text, when I think about how we use them, with the exception of that first one where you're just trying to illustrate a specific concept
right.
or a battle or a leader, how much do you think people, teachers and students alike, need to know the language of film analysis and the idea of film as text in order to make sense of the things that you're talking about?
I think knowing some of the basic language definitely helps. It's definitely not necessary, depending on how you're using the film in the classroom, in the discussions. I mean, you can, if you're focused on the narrative, of course, then there isn't there's no really specific terms. I think that the more depth that you want to get into the film, and let's say particularly if you're going to have a course, an entire course dedicated to film, then it's really good to put everybody sort of on the same wavelength and common sheet. So when they use these terms. Now, what I found is, so when I do my film class, my film elective with the cadets, I spend about the first five or six lessons going over some of these terms, giving examples so that we can go more in depth. And I warned the cadets. I said, you'll never look at a film the same way
right.
again. It sort of ruins it, because one of the great pleasures of the film is that this all happens and it's sort of, you know.
It's passive and you can sort of take it in.
Exactly. But I think when you do learn some of these things, and I would say, you know, some of the basic things like what is editing and how can editing affect a film? The use of sound, for example, that I already brought up in Saving Private Ryan and some of the other examples. So I think as an individual, you're aware of the different ways or the different ways that the director is in a mm-hmm. sense, manipulating you, right?
Yeah. And making choices, right, that you could choose to do one thing or another.
Exactly.
And that choices have consequences for how
exactly.
we feel and how we respond to things.
Exactly. So you can go in depth a little bit more the more you know sort of what you're looking for, like you would if you're analyzing a text or even to use military examples, if you're analyzing a battle, an operation, a campaign, there's a certain language that
right.
that helps you go more and more in depth.
Yeah, there's a vocabulary that will
exactly.
give you a foundation that you can communicate with. All right, so the last question, and I have no idea what your answer is going to be to this, but if you were limited for the rest of eternity to just one film to teach about war and strategy, which one would you pick?
Yeah, that was a really tough question. There's so many great films out there. And I think it's tough, too, to find one that maybe just checks all the blocks, that one that would show you war from, you know, boots on the ground up into the strategic sort of leader decision, too. But since we're almost complete with the 100-year anniversary of looking back at World War One, I'm going to go sort of old school and recommend the film All Quiet on the Western Front, 1930 Lewis Milestone, the original. Not the later version with John Boy in it, but the 1931. And why do I say that? I think it encapsulates a lot of what we talked about today already. It's first of all, it's a film. It's a Hollywood film the source material is a German novel. So I found it very interesting that in 1930, you know, a former enemy, right, Germany that fought against us in World War I, we're now using their source material to get this film. It's a film that had immediate historical impact. We may have heard that, of course, it was banned in Nazi Germany for being anti-war, anti-German. It was banned in some other countries as well, so it had immediate impact there. I think it also, we'll talk a little bit later or in a few minutes. Sorry, we may need to edit this one. it says the film is based, oh, I already said that. The film, for those who aren't familiar, recounts the story of the young Paul Boehmer, who enlists with his other high school classmates to fight for Germany, the fatherland, and the war. Although the film does not include a portrayal of a strategic leader, I think there's a certain sense of lack of purpose and strategy that permeates the entire film. So it's essentially about soldiers fighting for each other, but really for no purpose. There's a great sequence at the beginning of the film where these high school boys that will eventually enlist are really riled up by their high school teacher that's telling them to fight for the glory of Germany, and they all get excited. And there's all these great editing where they're all standing up and yelling, "Yes, I'll go fight." And there's sort of that empty promise, that empty use of patriotism at the beginning of the film. That really gets debunked as the soldiers go through it. I also think it's, even though it was made almost 90 years ago, there's a lot of topics that are very current today, particularly the whole civil-military divide.
Sure.
There's a great scene in the middle of the film where Paul goes back on leave, and no one can really understand what his war experience was like. No one really wants to understand what his war experience was like. And he actually ends up going back to the front earlier because he just can't take it anymore.
Right. I mean, I think that idea that films can give us that entry point to talk about difficult things, to talk about things that we may not want to talk about right now, but we can talk about them in World War One, where it gives us a little bit of distance in order to explore some of the really difficult issues that come with talking about war and strategy as well.
Right. I also think it's a great film because it shapes and influences almost every other war film that follows it. It was one of the first to really focus on these realistic combat sequences. And I know Steven Spielberg has mentioned it influenced him for Saving Private Ryan. But it really sets up this dynamic, I think, in a war film that almost demands that we're showing what's going on in the trenches and that we care about what the soldiers are
doing.
And that's what I think will shape not only future war films but other narratives about particularly how we in the West look at war and war narrative.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm ready to go pop some popcorn and add some new films to my list, and to really think about how to expand the use of film and other artistic and creative forms when we go about teaching these really difficult subjects. So again, thanks and good luck.
Thank you very
much. When you go back to teach cadets at West Point, we hope they have a good time.
Yeah. All thanks. Right. Thank you.
And that concludes our program. Thank you for listening. The views expressed in this podcast reflect those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views, policies, or positions of the U.S. Army or the Department of Defense. Let us know what you think. Provide us your feedback, comments, or suggestions through our webpage at warroom.armywarcollege.edu. And have a great day.